Okay, great. So welcome back, everybody. We are continuing our series on the Rambam's introduction to Mishnah. And as we've said in the past, the learning of the Mishnayos and the Rambam's commentary to the Mishnayos is in memory of the those that were killed in the Meron tragedy, as well as in the operation in Israel. And up until this point, we were learning. As a merit for Refuah Shleima, for healing of Mr. Lloyd Epstein. Now that he has passed, we will continue to learn Le'ilui Nishmaso in his memory, as well as for a continued Refuah Shleima for all those that need healing. I'm just noticing on the screen that someone has raised their hand. If you have a question and you're not able to use the chat feature, if you're using the phone, feel free to unmute for a moment if you have a question or not. Okay, well, regardless, just a small bit of housekeeping. In terms of going forward, after this class, next week is Shavasar B'Tammuz. It is the fast of the 17th day of Tammuz, the beginning of the three-week period leading up to Tisha B'Av. So next Sunday, we're still developing it, but there is a chance that the shul will have a special learning program in the afternoon. At 9 o'clock is generally when people will be breaking their fasts. So I don't think there will be a class this coming Sunday. Instead, there will be something Sunday afternoon. Obviously, if anything changes, I will certainly send out an email and also on the WhatsApp. But for now, assume that there will not be a class next Sunday, and then we'll continue after that. So after this week, I anticipate there being another 2 to 3 classes before we finish up this series. Probably 2 classes, but we'll see. So going back, last class, 2 weeks ago, we covered what I believe was probably one of the most important parts of the Rambam's introduction to Mishnah, because last time we dealt with the 5 categories of Torah Sheba'al Peh, the 5 components of the oral law, were the 5 components of Torah that Moshe was given at Har Sinai, and that were included in the Mishnah. This week, we will continue with the Rambam's narrative of the evolution of Torah and touch on what I think is also a very important point. To the Rambam, it may not have been super important because he took it for granted, but as I mentioned in the first class, I would point out the few instances where the Rambam actually disagrees with other rabbinic or secular academic opinions. This will be one of them regarding the authorship of the Mishnah as well as the authorship of the Gemara of the Talmud. As we'll see, when people are first initially taught about Mishnah or about Gemara and its authorship, we generally assume one thing, which as we'll see is what the Rambam assumed. However, the Rambam, and he wasn't alone in his opinion, but the Rambam's opinion was actually contested by many other rabbis, many other of his contemporaries, both before and after, as well as many current secular academics. And it's been an ongoing debate for thousands of years. It's too long to really talk about in part of a class. But what I do hope to cover tonight, in addition to reading the text of the Rambam, is to show at least sort of the rabbinic origins of this debate regarding the authorship of the Mishnah as well as the authorship of the Gemara. So before we get to that, just to provide the background, the structure, the Rambam organized his introduction to Mishnah as a narrative. It might be a little bit difficult to pick that up just from these classes because we've been going topically, but if you read it cover to cover, the Rambam wrote a very, very structured introduction to Mishnah and Talmud. And he constructed it as a narrative starting from when Moshe got the Torah at Sinai up until the Rambam's own time. And throughout that historical narrative, he'll go on these massive tangents. He'll go on these massive tangents. We saw a couple of them. Probably the biggest one that we've covered up until this point was regarding prophecy, the role of prophecy in halacha. And the second tangent, which again wasn't really necessarily a tangent per se, but it's a tangent in the narrative sense, was what we discussed last week, which was the five components of Torah that we have. Now we're going to go back to the narrative structure where we left off, which is at the point of the composition of the Mishnah, when the Mishnah was written down. And it was written down, according to the Rambam, and many of us, when we learned about the Mishnah, by Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, Rabbi Judah the Prince. Also, he is known in Mishnah and Gemara as Rabbeinu HaKadosh, the Holy Rabbi, or just Rebbe, our teacher. That's who the Rambam will now be writing about. So let me share the screen. I'll share the text with you. Give me one moment. Okay. Uka'asher higia hazman achareihem el Rabbeinu HaKadosh alav hashalom. So after all of the opinions and sages and halachic developments of the Tanaim, the rabbis during the Mishnah period, we reached the time of Rabbeinu HaKadosh, Judah the Prince, Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi. And then the Rambam actually devotes, we'll read some of it, the Rambam devotes a couple of paragraphs describing the uniqueness of Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi. V'haya yachid b'doro, he was unique in his generation, the echad bizmano, and basically one in a million, one in a generation, ish shenimtza bo kol hachamudos v'hamidos tovos, a person that had all of the graces and all of the good character traits. Basically, the Rambam says he had everything. He was the most perfect person, if you will. Ad shezacha bahem etzel anshei doro likroso Rabbeinu HaKadosh ushmo Yehuda. He was such a perfect person, or such a great, good person, to the point that he merited to be called Rabbeinu HaKadosh, our holy rabbi, which, at least in rabbinic literature, we don't know of anybody else called that. And his name was Yehuda. The Rambam then elaborates, v'haya b'chachma u'bema'ala b'tachlisam. And he was complete in both wisdom and virtue. Kimosha Amru, as the Talmud says, Miyamos Moshe Rabbeinu, from the days of Moshe, Va'ad Rebbe, until Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, Lo Ra'inu Torah Ugdula B'makom Echad. We did not see Torah and greatness in one person. Now, greatness can mean many things, and the Rambam will elaborate that greatness means both intellectual and midos, character trait perfection. But in addition to that, there was also, you could say, more gashmiistic, more physical perfection as well. He was beautiful, he was wealthy, and he was politically powerful. And so the Gemara says that from Moshe until Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, we did not see Torah, intellectual mastery of the Torah, combined with such character, political, physical, and spiritual greatness rolled into one. And despite all of that, the Rambam says, V'haya b'tachlis ha-chasidus v'ha-anava v'ha-harchaka ha-tanugim. And despite all of the political and physical greatness that he had, he was pious in the sense that he was humble and he distanced himself from physical pleasures. Kimo shamru gamkein, as the sages also said in the Talmud, Mishemes Rebbe batla anava v'yiras chet. When Rebbe died, humility and fear of sin ceased to exist, meaning he epitomized that. Then the Rambam continues, V'hayatzach lashon umuflag mikol ha'adam b'lashon ha'kodesh. The Rambam says, highlights, again, something that at first glance may seem not like a bad thing, but just something that's rather capricious or peculiar that the Rambam would make such a big deal about it. The Rambam says that Rebbe knew Hebrew really well. He was an expert in Lashon HaKodesh in Hebrew. Now again, what language the common Jews spoke during the time of Rebbe? Rebbe lived in probably the second century BCE. It's a little bit of a debate, but probably around the second century BCE, in the late second century. So the Jews probably spoke a combination of Aramaic, maybe some Latin or whatever, dialect the common Roman spoke back then. Probably they knew some Hebrew, but much like Yiddish or the Sephardic equivalent of Yiddish, I forget exactly what it's called, Ladino, is sort of an amalgamation of Hebrew as well as the local language. So too, the average Jewish person living in Eretz Yisrael at the time of the Roman Empire probably spoke an amalgamation of Hebrew, maybe some Greek, maybe some Aramaic, maybe some Latin. It was a combination. Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi excelled at Hebrew. Ad shachachamim alav hashalom, so much so that the sages, hayu lomdim pirush mashen ishtabesh aleihem meosios hamikra midivre avadav umisharsav. So much so that they would learn the meaning that they had either forgotten or mixed up to try to understand biblical verses in the Torah. Who would they learn it from? They would learn it from Rebbe's servants, his slaves and his maidservants. Apparently, at least according to the Rambam's understanding of this Gemara that he's basing himself on, people at that time did not speak Hebrew very well or were not proficient in biblical Hebrew. Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi was an expert in it, and his entire household was fluent in Hebrew. And he started a revolution to be able to teach people how to speak Hebrew well. And then the Rambam says, okay, Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi was a great person. He also knew Hebrew very well. And we'll go back to why that might be so important. Then he goes on to another one of Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi's great ma'alos, one of his great character traits. V'hayalo min ha'osher, v'ahon v'rachav ha'yecholas. He had wealth and assets and broad means. Ma'shenemar bo ahorhoraya direbi hava'asar mishvor malka. The stable overseer, meaning the person in charge of Rebbe's stable, was wealthier than the king of Persia. So Rebbe was incredibly wealthy. And so he made men of wisdom and umevakshe, and those that wanted to become talmidei chachamim, viravatz Torah v'Yisrael. He made them comfortable. He was a philanthropist. He supported the sages. He supported the growth of Torah. So not only was Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi a scholar in his own right and a very righteous person, he also had the political and financial means to basically care for an endangered species known as the rabbis. The rabbis were persecuted. The rabbis were poor. And here, amidst all of that darkness, some person emerges who has not only the intellectual mastery of the Torah and the proportional spiritual development of piety, but they also have the political and financial means to take care of the growth of and the survival of Torah. So what did Rebbe do? Not only did he support the sages, the asaf hahalachos v'divrei hachma v'hamachlokes hamakubalos miyamos Moshe Rabbeinu ad yimosav. He gathered, because he supported the sages and because he was a scholar in his own right, he basically collated all of the rabbinic literature, and again, it wasn't really written down at that time, but all of the discussions of thousands of years, he had the means to combine all of them, to collate all of them, to edit them, and that's exactly what he did. V'hu haya ba'atzmo min ha'mekablim. Now the Rambam says, don't forget that he himself, Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, just wasn't this external party. He was actually part of that chain of Mesorah, Shu kibel mi Shimon Aviv, that he received from his father, Shimon. And Shimon received it from Gamliel, his father, who received it from Shimon. who got it from Hillel, who got it from Shemaiah and Avtalion, who got it from Yehuda ben Tabai, who got it from Shimon ben Shetach, who got it from Yehoshua ben Parachya, etc., etc. And he basically retraces Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi's both ancestral biological heritage as well as his Mesorah, his learning pedigree, all the way back to Ezra, to Shimon HaTzadik, the first sage that's mentioned in the Mishnah, in Pirkei Avos, the earliest Mishnaic sage, who got it from Ezra. Who got it from Ezra that's mentioned in Tanakh, and Ezra got it from Baruch ben Neria. We don't know much about him, but Baruch ben Neria was a prophet who was Ezra's teacher, and Baruch ben Neria was the student of Yirmiyahu Hanavi. Now then the Rambam says, we don't know who Yirmiyahu's teacher was. V'chein kibel Yirmiyahu b'li safek me'asher kadmo min ha-Navim, Navi mipi Navi, ad ha-Zekeinim ha-Mekablim mipi Yoshua ben Nun v'hu mipi Moshe. We don't know who Yirmiyahu's teacher was. But the Rambam says, without a doubt, we believe that Yirmiyahu got it from his teacher, who got it from his teacher, all the way back to Yehoshua, who got it from Moshe. So what the Rambam has done is shown that Rebbe was not only somebody who supported Torah and somebody who achieved the Herculean task of collecting all of the rabbinic discussions of thousands of years, but he was also an active part of that chain because he could trace his learning pedigree all the way back to Moshe. So what did Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi do? V'ka'asher kilel ha-dayos v'ha-dvarim. And when he gathered all of those statements about halacha, hechel l'chaber ha-mishnah, he began to compose the Mishnah. Shehi koleles pirush kol ha-mitzvos ha-ksuvos ba-Torah, which includes the explanation of all of the commandments that are written in the Torah. Now again, we've said this many times throughout the series, that according to the Rambam, the Torah Sheba'al Peh, the oral law is primarily a commentary to the Torah Shebichsav, the written Torah, the Tanakh. So that's why the Rambam says that he combined all of these halachot, all of these discussions to compose the Mishnah, which serves as an explanation of the commandments that are written in the Torah. Mehem kiblos mikubalos mipi Moshe alav hashalom. Some of them were received by a tradition from Moshe. Umehem deos hotziyam v'derech hasvara ve'in aleihem machlokes. And some of the halachos were extrapolated by way of reason, and they didn't argue. And some of them had debates, and Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi wrote them as debates. V'ilu haya echad cholek al rabim. If there would be one person arguing on many people, then he would write the one person by name, and then he would just say, the chachamim, the sages, argue, and that's who he would hold like. Then the Rambam goes to discuss all the different types of Torah, which we spoke about last time. So I'm going to skip that, and we'll go to the next part. But before we move on, I want to just take a step back and look at how the Rambam described Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, because Rav Shilat points out through other writings of the Rambam that the Rambam was taken. He was fascinated, inspired, and really looked up to Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi as a role model. Again, I wasn't able to get a hold of the text that he was referring to. But the Rav Shilat says that there are many, letters that the Rambam wrote, which showed that he really admired Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi for what he accomplished. Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, the Rambam says, was a person that created a revolution of Torah whose ramifications reverberated to the Rambam's time and beyond, to our very day, by radically transforming how Torah was studied. Up until that point, it was oral. And Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, according to the Rambam, wrote down the Mishnah. He transformed Torah. And that person is one in a million. And you need to kind of figure out what makes that type of person. That type of person, according to the way the Talmud describes Rebbe, is somebody that is perfect in all areas. Someone that is proficient in Torah, part of a chain, an unbroken chain of Torah, perfect in piety, not interested in physical pleasures, humble, and then beyond that is also politically connected and wealthy. And when you have all of those ma'alos and you know Hebrew very well to be able to understand the Torah's words and then to write in a concise, beautiful language that can be understood by everybody as well as to be able to understand the Torah, when you have all of that rolled into one, then you can become a Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi and basically catalyze a watershed moment in Jewish history. The Rambam aspired to be that type of person. And if you think about it, the Rambam really tried to do that. Again, I don't know if it was intentional, but the Rambam had many of those qualities. He was politically connected. At least at one point in his life, he was well off. Not towards the end of his life, but at the beginning of his life, his brother David was a merchant, and he supported both himself and the Rambam's family. And then when David died, the Rambam supported his own family and David's widow and children. The Rambam believed that he was an expert in Hebrew. The Rambam could trace his own pedigree in learning all the way back to Moshe. And the Rambam believed that in order to be a Talmid Chacham, not only did you need to be intellectually developed, you also needed to be ethically developed. You needed to be humble. You needed to be pious. You needed to distance yourself from physical pleasures. All of those things are basically what the Rambam believes the perfect scholar and Jewish leader is supposed to be. And when you have all those qualities, you can change Jewish history. And that's what the Rambam saw when he was wanted to do when he was writing his commentary to Mishnah, as then subsequently later writing his Yad HaChazakah, his Mishnah Torah, his compendium on Jewish law, basically in his mind was a new Mishnah, something that did not have all of the verbosity of the Gemara, but just showed the Piskei Halachot, the just bare bones decisions of what to do, and being able to trace that back to the Torah. According to the Rambam, that's what the Mishnah is. And the Rambam was trying to do that for his own generation. And as we'll see in a few moments, according to the Rambam, the Mishnah was not written for sages. Each sage had their own personal notes. The Mishnah was supposed to be a text that could be studied by the masses. And that's what the Rambam wanted to do when he was writing his commentary to Mishnah, and then subsequently his code on Jewish law, his Mishnah Torah. That was probably written for a slightly more learned cadre of people because it was written in Hebrew as opposed to Arabic. But the bulk of the Rambam's literature was in Arabic. It was written for the common person. And so Rav Shilat suggests that the reason why the Rambam devotes so much time to describing the beautiful characteristics of who Rebbe was is because the Rambam believed that you needed to embody all of this to create such a revolution in Torah and in Judaism. And the Rambam wanted to do the same. The Rambam's dream and goal and what he believed he needed to do was to do the same. That's just something very interesting. Another topic which the Rambam seems to imply is that Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, Rabbeinu HaKadosh, was the author of the Mishnah. Let's continue. I'm going to now skip what we did last week, as well as another part, which is extremely long, where the Rambam basically explains the order of the Mishnayos. It's very interesting for those who want to try to understand how the Rambam thinks about the topic, but it's not so central for the rest of the introduction, so I'm going to skip it, and if you want to learn it, I encourage you to do so. We're going to skip now to after that whole organizational scheme where the Rambam gets back to his narrative about the Mishnah and subsequent rabbinic literature. So, achar kach, so after Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi decided that he was going to compose the Mishnah, Ra'a lehistapek mishemos hamekubalim al hakrovim elav mishimon hatzadik. The Rambam now touches on something which he kind of backed himself into a corner here. Because as we've said many times, according to the Rambam, halacha continued to evolve and develop and to be debated from the time of Moshe all the way up until the time of Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi. And according to the Rambam, Torah was continuously evolving. Moshe Rabbeinu only got the general principles that were absolutely necessary to understand the Torah, as well, as an assortment of other halachos known as the halachos l'Moshe Misinai. The details that may emerge as questions throughout history were not given to Moshe. Rather, Moshe was given the tools to pass along to future generations to be able to figure it out on their own and to debate it amongst themselves. Therefore, according to the Rambam, halacha developed over hundreds and thousands of years. If that's the case, then how come our record of Mishnah only goes back to the time of Shimon HaTzadik? Shimon HaTzadik, we don't know exactly when he lived, but it was around, I guess, the beginning half of the second Beis Hamikdash's time. It says that he was Mishiyare Anshei Knesset HaGdola. The Anshei Knesset HaGdola, the men of the Great Assembly, were at the time of the building of the second Beis Hamikdash, and Shimon HaTzadik, the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos says, lived at the end of that era. So it was towards the beginning of the temple's second temple's construction. There were hundreds, if not thousands, of years of Jewish history before that. So the question is, how come our Mishnah only goes back that far in terms of naming people? So the Rambam says that this was sort of an editorial decision made by Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi. He saw it fit to suffice with the names of those that received the tradition of those close in time to him, starting from Shimon HaTzadik. Rambam doesn't exactly explain why, but he says that this was an editorial decision that Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi made when, in terms of recording the names of sages, only starting by Shimon HaTzadik. Now, the Rambam doesn't explain any further. I mentioned at the beginning of the series that I primarily relied upon Rev Shilat Sefer, as well as this one, which is an edition by Rabbi Tzvi Lempel. And I said one of the reasons why I liked it is because he has some footnotes where he cross-references with other works, as well as he puts in his own two cents once in a while. So there's a footnote over here where he tries to posit an idea. I think it makes a lot of sense. I don't have any proof to it, but I think it's an interesting idea. And he says that according to the Rambam, if you look at the Rambam's words closely, he doesn't say that Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi was trying to create a history of the evolution of halachic ideas. Rather, the editorial decision was to only mention names of people that received the tradition, that were part of the Mesorah. In other words, the function of names, or at least one of the functions of names in the Mishnah, was to establish a chain of tradition leading all the way back to Moshe. And so when trying to trace the history of that chain, Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi decided to stop at Shimon HaTzadik. Why? Because Shimon HaTzadik was the threshold, or was sort of on the cusp of the biblical era. Before Shimon HaTzadik, all the rest of the members of the Anshei Knesset HaGdola are mentioned in Tanakh. They're mentioned in Navi, in the prophets Haggai, Zechariah, and Malachi. They're also mentioned in Ksuvim in the book of Ezra and Nehemiah. So according to the Rambam then, Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi didn't need to mention all of the people up until Moshe Rabbeinu's time in name, because a person could just look in Tanakh and do that. A person could do that on their own by looking in the Bible. And so that is perhaps, Rabbi Lampel suggests, why, according to the Rambam, Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi only decided to write from Shimon HaTzadik. It's a suggestion. I don't have a proof to it, but I think it works. Then the Rambam goes on and he describes what the Mishnah is. Vayu dvarav b'mishnah davar katzar. Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi's words in the Mishnah were very terse. V'kolel inyanim rabim, and they contained many things. V'ya ha'kol mevuar lo l'chadod sichlo. And Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, because he was so brilliant, he was able to extrapolate, using the words that he wrote, to infer all the details of the halacha. Aval lemishu pachos mimenu min ha'inyan ha'hu, amok b'inyanav, she'achachamim ha'kadumim lo hayu mechabrim elav l'nafshasem. So it was lucid to him. It was clear to Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi what he meant. Though for someone who was not as great as Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, who was not as erudite or perhaps expert in Hebrew language as Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi was, it might not be easy to explain it. And then the Rambam says, and in fact, earlier sages would have notes for themselves. The Mishnah was essentially collating and publishing various notes that had been occurring over many, many generations. So not only was Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi an author, he was actually an editor as well. However, the Rambam says it was very hard for people to understand. It was very hard for people to understand the text of the Mishnah alone. And therefore, subsequent works were needed to explain the Mishnah. So the earliest one was what is called the Tosefta. Lefichach, therefore, ra'a echad mitalmidav, v'hu Rabbi Chiya, one of Rebbe's students, known as Rabbi Chiya, saw it fit lechaber sefer, to write a new book, v'lelechet bo achar rabo, and to follow in the footsteps of his teacher, u'levaer mashenishtabesh midivrei rabo, and to explain what people had misinterpreted from his teacher, v'hi tosefta, and that is the Tosefta. If any of you take a large Gemara, in the back of it is a Tosefta. At the end of every tractate, there's a Tosefta, which looks like Mishnah, but there's like more stuff added on. So according to the Rambam, the purpose of the Tosefta was to explain the text of the Mishnah, sort of a proto-Gemara, if you will. The Tosefta of Shar Lahotzi Ta'ama Meha Mishnah Achar Yegiya Rabba. And if you put in a lot of effort into understanding the Tosefta, you'll then be able to understand the Mishnah. V'hu Hotziyam L'lamdeinu Heichno Lid V'notzi Inyanim Min HaMishnah. And the purpose of the Tosefta was to show how you can extrapolate halachos from the Mishnah. V'chein asa Rabbi Oshia, and Rabbi Oshia subsequently joined in to write his own, not Tosefta, but to add on as well. Then he talks about other post-Mishnaic works that were used to help explain halacha and to supplement the Mishnah. The Rav, who was one of the sages mentioned in the Gemara, Chiber Braisa, he made a collection of Braisos, Vihi Sifra V'Sifrei. These are known as the Sifra and Sifrei. The Sifra and Sifrei are Medrash Halacha. They are basically halachic explanations and analyses of verses in Tanakh. The Sifra is on the book of Vayikra, and the Sifrei is on the book of Bamidbar and the book of Devarim. I'm just going to stop sharing this and just show you a chart, which I find very helpful. Give me one moment here. So I'll make it bigger in a second. This is a chart that was published by Chabad, I believe in the 40s. It basically shows the history of Torah. So it starts off, Torah Tziva Lanu Moshe. Moshe got the Torah, the Aseret HaDibros, the Ten Commandments at Har Sinai. And what do we have? We have the Torah, we have the Nevi'im, and we have Ksuvim. If you look under the Torah, you see by Shemos it says Mechilta, that's a Medrash Halacha. Under Vayikra we have the Sifra, which is another Medrash Halacha. And then finally, under Bamidbar and Devarim, we have the Sifrei. We have the Medrash Halacha on Bamidbar and Devarim. Then, if you see, we have the Mishnah. The Mishnah is essentially a commentary to the entire Tanakh. Then, if you go a little bit further, then you have the Braisa and Tosefta, which is what the Rambam is talking about now. These are essentially commentaries on the Mishnah. Then, we'll get to it in a little bit, the Talmud Bavli and the Talmud Yerushalmi, the Babylonian and the Jerusalem Talmud, were written based off of the Mishnah, the Braisa, and the Tosefta. So this sort of describes the, I guess, development of Torah Sheba'al Peh, of the oral law. Let's go back now to the text. Here we are. So now the Rambam has to explain, if there were so many of these works, right? We have the Mishnah, we have the Tosafta, we have various Brysos, we have the Sifra, we have the Sifrei, we have the Mechelta. These are a lot of different works. So why did we choose the Mishnah? Why did we decide that the Mishnah would be the authoritative text? And here's where the Hebrew part comes back, right? The Rambam said that Rebbe, in addition to his scholarship in terms of halacha and Torah, he was also an expert in Lashon HaKodesh in Hebrew. He was a good writer, and he was not only a good writer, he was able to understand the biblical text well. The Ulam, Lo hayu eleh habraisos kulam kitzachos divrei ha-mishnah, velo kitikun inyaneha v'kotzer mileha. And despite the many rabbinic works at that time, these texts were not smooth like the words of the Mishnah. And they were not organized as well. And they weren't short and concise enough. And therefore, the Mishnah became the primary text, and everything else became secondary. V'chol haba achareha, achar hachabura hanechbedet hahi, and any subsequent group of people or rabbinic work, lo sam libo odo, elo lehisponem b'divrei ha-mishnah. The Rambam says that the authoritativeness of the Mishnah, obviously, because it was based on a tradition, going back all the way to Moshe, but the conciseness and the organization and the prose of its language, the ability to contain all of halacha in such a terse, beautiful language, led it to be universally accepted, so much so that all subsequent works had to explain the Mishnah. All subsequent works, like the Gemara, exist only to explain the Mishnah. That's how Torah Sheba'al Peh, oral law and halacha, evolved and became structured. V'nechlaku b'peirush tzas halachos mimena. And sometimes people would disagree about the Mishnah. There would be debates as to how to understand the Mishnah. And people would try to infer new things from the text of the Mishnah. And that developed until the time of Ravina and Ravashi, which is probably around the year 500. And Ravina and Ravashi were the last sages of the Talmud, and they did what Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi did. They collected all of the discussions that had happened up until that point to explain the Mishnah. And just like what Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi did to the Torah, they did for the Mishnah. Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi created a collection of halachos that became a commentary to the Torah. So Ravina and Ravashi created a commentary of halachos to explain the Mishnah. So if we would take this Rambam at face value, it would seem that Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, who lived probably in the year 200, maybe 215, wrote the Mishnah, and that's the text that we have today. And Ravina and Ravashi, who lived like 550 in Babylon, in the Persian Empire, they wrote the Talmud, the text that we have today. That's the Rambam's opinion. And if you look in other works of the Rambam, especially his introduction in Mishneh Torah, his Yad HaChazakah, his Code of Jewish Law, he says that quite explicitly, that the text that we have of the Mishnah was composed by Rav Yehuda Hanasi, and the text of the Gemara that we have was composed by Ravina and Ravashi. That is not a universally accepted position. It is the simplest one, and it is the one that at least I was taught, and I'm sure many of you may have been taught as you either grew up or began to be exposed to rabbinic literature. Who was the author of the Mishnah? Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi. Who was the author of the Gemara? Ravina and Ravashi. It's actually a debate. there is a school of thought that Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi didn't write it. He composed the text. He collated all of the opinions. He organized it into the format that we have, but he didn't actually write it down. He composed perhaps an oral text, right? The role of Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi was to organize it because it was being forgotten. And so Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi created a system to remember it. So maybe he composed a text, but it wasn't written down. It was transmitted orally. And so over the centuries, it could have been changed. People may have debated what the actual words of Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi were. And in fact, in the Gemara, there are discussions that maybe we should change the text of the Mishnah. Maybe there's a mistake. And sometimes the Gemara says that, even though the text of the Mishnah is the way we have it, it actually means something else. And according to this later school of opinion, the Mishnah may have been composed by Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, but it was not written down until the days of Ravina and Ravashi in the year 500 or the year 550 or whatever. And then similarly, according to that school of thought, the Talmud was not written down at that point. The Mishnah was written down at that point. The role of Ravina and Ravashi was to collect, like Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi did, to collect all of the opinions up until that point and to create an organizational scheme for it. And over the next 200, 300, 400 years, the text of the Talmud began to become standardized. And according to that school of thought, the subsequent generations before the Gaonim were known as the Savoran. It was about a period of about 200, 250 years. We have very little historical information about them. But they were the ones that really finalized the text of the Gemara, the text of the Talmud. So let me just show you that on that chart that I showed you earlier. Here, so if we scroll down, you have the Talmud Bavli and Talmud Yerushalmi. And then beneath that, you have the Tshuvot V'Sifrei Rabbanan Savorai. These were known as the Savoraim. And again, they existed for a very short period of time in Jewish history, probably for about 200 years, between the year 550 and about the year 750. And they were the ones, according to this school of thought, that really finalized or hammered out the text of the Talmud. Up until that point, wasn't all written down. It existed in various stages, some of it oral, some of it written. There were different versions. They added stuff, they deleted stuff. It was more of an organic document at that point. Now, what I'm saying might sound like rather academic and perhaps not really Torah arguments, and it is. This is the, what I'm saying now is the prevailing, I guess you would say, secular academic position, but it actually has its roots in very, very traditional rabbinic literature. And that's the text that I'm going to show you now. I'm going to scroll up to the beginning of this source sheet. The primary source, at least in traditional Jewish literature for this debate, is what is known as the Igeret Rav Sharira Gaon. Rav Sharira Gaon was one of the last Gaonim. Going back to that chart that I showed you, I'm sorry, I'm going back and forth, but if we go back down to that chart, beneath the Savoraim, you have Teshuvot V'Sifrei HaGaonim, the works of the Gaonim. The Gaonim were, they lived in Bavel, in Babylon, after the around the time of the Islamic conquest, a little before that, and then certainly afterwards, from about the year 750 till about the year 1000, a little bit later than that, but around the year 1000, maybe a little bit earlier, they were the ones that were really the last vestige of a long line of Torah scholarship in Babylon. The Jewish learning shifted from Israel to Babylon after the Mishnah. It shifted, and that was where the Gemara was composed that we have, the Talmud Bavli. After the Amoraim, we had the Savoraim, who sort of took over. And then there was a bit of a lull because of various political, geopolitical realities. And then the yeshivas once again were started under the Gaonim. And after the Gaonim died, Torah in Babylon really almost completely disappeared. And then you have sort of the flourishing of the age of the Rishonim, medieval Judaism in Sfarad, in Spain, in North Africa, as well as in Ashkenaz in France and Germany. Two different schools of Ashkenaz and Sfarad. They supplanted the centrality of Torah in Babylon of the Gaonim. So one of the last Gaonim was Rav Sharira Gaon. So Rav Sharira Gaon lived in the 900s. He lived in Baghdad on this map. And part of that, I would say, evolution or transition of the centrality of Torah scholarship from Baghdad to areas in Franco-Germany in Europe, as well as in North Africa and Spain, that took place in his lifetime. There's a story which may or may not be true, known as the story of the four captives, the Arba Shvuyot, which were rabbis that were sailing. They had a journey to raise money for the yeshiva in Baghdad. And they were in the Mediterranean. They were captured by pirates and they were ransomed by four Jewish communities. And they were the ones that started real, true Torah scholarship in those communities. One of the communities where there was a great center of Torah learning at that time, relatively speaking, was Karawan in Tunisia. Let's see if I can just show you the box. That's where Karawan is. So one of the rabbis there wrote a letter to Rav Sharira Gaon with a list of questions. Some of them are nuanced, are small details. Some of them are broader questions. But it prompted a letter of Rav Sharira Gaon, which spoke about basically the evolution of Torah. The evolution of Torah, much like the Rambam's own introduction. It'd be very interesting to sort of compare and contrast them. That's really beyond the scope of this series. But there is one point which is very interesting. And the question is, did the Rambam see this text? I don't know. It's hard to say. It is very hard to say. It's certainly possible. There is a lot of overlap. But there might be a potential difference because we actually have two different versions of this text. There is one known as the Spanish version and one known as the French version. There aren't so many differences, but one of the differences is who wrote the Mishnah. And there's a whole debate as to which is the more reliable text. Up until, I would say, about, I don't know, probably about 100 years probably about 150 years ago, including Solomon Schechter, people believed that the Spanish version was the more accurate one. And some continue to believe this. Contemporary academic and some rabbinic opinions have said that the French text is the more authoritative one. And it really goes back and forth. And some people say that the French version was actually written in Spain, and it's a mistake. And we'll see actually a proof for that. But it's a whole debate as to which is the more authoritative text. And as I said, there really aren't that many substantive differences between the two texts. One of the few that does exist, one of the few major differences, is who wrote the Mishnah. So let's take a look at this text. On the left, actually, we'll start off with the one on the right. On the right is the Sephardic version, is the Nusach HaSfaradi. V'lo hava chad min harishonim de kasav mida'am, Ad Sof Yomei de Rabbeinu HaKadosh. And there were none of the initial sages that formally wrote anything down in terms of rabbinic literature until the end of the days of Rabbeinu HaKadosh, Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, implying that afterwards, people did. Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi wrote the Mishnah, Ravin and Ravashi wrote the Gemara. This is the Spanish version, it's just the Sfardi version, and that seems to be what the Rambam holds, which makes sense. The Rambam was a Sfardi. Let's take a look on the left, though. The Nusach HaTzarfati, the French version. Va'ad sof yomeho de rabbanan leka de kasav mida'am kol ikar. Until the end of the days of the rabbis of the Talmud, there was no formal writing of rabbinic literature at all. This is a very significant difference. According to the French version, Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi may have composed an organizational scheme. He may have collated, he may have edited, he even may have formulated a text to the Mishnah, but it was not written down until the end of the Talmudic period, hundreds of years later. This is a difference. This is a very significant difference between the Spanish and French version of this Igeres Rav Sharira Gaon. And like I said, there are debates in terms of both rabbinic and academic positions as to which is the correct one. But in the days of medieval Judaism, it really split very neatly. A lot of the early Spanish Sephardic rabbis wrote like the Spanish version of the Igeres, that Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi wrote the Mishnah and Ravina and Rav Ashi wrote the Gemara. Many of the French-German sages, like Rashi and the Smag, the Sefer Mitzvot HaGadol, which is one of the Balei Tosfot, they wrote like the French version, that Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi may have edited, collated, even composed an oral text, but he did not write it down. Ravina and Rav Ashi may have composed a text of the Gemara, but it was not hammered out until later. Where it gets interesting is after the two schools of thought, the French and the Spanish schools, have had the chance to converse, you actually see a little bit of overlap. If you look in source number two, this is an excerpt from the Chidushei Ritva to Maseches Erevin. The Ritva, as I said in the sheet, is Rabbi Yom Tov Ashvili. He lived in 13th century Spain in Seville. He was the Talmud of the Rashba, Rabbi Shlomo ben Aderet, who was a student of the Ramban, Nachmanides. And Nachmanides was actually a student of the Provence rabbis. We'll go down to this map. Provence was on the border of the Ashkenazi and Sephardic communities, and there was an opportunity to converse with each other for a little bit of diffusion of Torah methodology and Torah ideas. So I don't know anything that the Ramban or the Rashba say on this topic, but one of their grand students, if you will, the Ramban's grand student, the Ritva, give me 1 second. I messed up with the screen share. Start again. Okay. You have one of his grand students, the Ritva, who actually writes like the French version. The Ritva says, Nakat Megillah Ta'anit, that the Gemara is talking about writing down various texts. And so it used the term Megillas Ta'anis. This is, we mentioned it in an earlier class, not in this series, but in a class, on a Parsha class a few weeks ago, about a month ago, about a book called Megillas Ta'anis. Megillas Ta'anis was the earliest written, published work of rabbinic literature. It was written down before the Mishnah during the time of the second Beis HaMikdash. It was basically a list of days that you couldn't fast or eulogize on because they were days, happy days, holidays about the religious and political freedom of the Jewish people during the Second Temple era. We don't celebrate them nowadays because the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. There are two exceptions, namely Hanukkah and Purim. So when the Gemara wants to talk about writing down a work of rabbinic literature, it talks about Megillas Ta'anis. And so the Ritva asks, why specifically Megillas Ta'anis? You have the whole Mishnah, you have all of the Midrashim. So why did the Gemara say specifically Megillas Ta'anis? And so it says, Mipnei Shishar Svarim Lo Hayu Nechtavim Bimei Chachmei HaTalmud. That Megillas Ta'anis was used because other books of rabbinic literature were not written during the days of the sages of the Talmud. So the Ritva, here you have the Ritva, who is a Sephardi, who's actually quoting the French version, who's quoting the French version of the text, that Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi did not write down the Mishnah, and Ravina and Rav Ashi did not write down the text of the Gemara. So there are two kind of ways to answer that question. One is to say that the French version is not really a French version. We eventually got it in France, but it actually started off in Spain. That's what some scholars believe. Or what's entirely possible is that it diffused from Spain, it diffused from France into Spain after a certain point. The Ritva was after the Rambam. So the Rambam, when the Rambam grew up, he was educated by his father, who was educated by the Rimagash, who was educated by the Rif, who was one of the really old school North African sages who got this letter. So it's entirely possible that the Rambam and his contemporaries studied off of the Spanish version. The Ritva, and again, this is just my hypothesis, I really don't know, it's entirely possible that the Ritva, who lived 200 years after the Rambam, had access and was taught the French version of the text, which was different. We don't know. It's entirely possible. But the point that I want to take out from this is that who wrote the Mishnah and Gemara is not really a simple question. Now, again, the actual ramifications are very minimal. Both versions of the text believe that Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi collated, organized, edited, and may have even composed the text of the Mishnah orally. And Ravine and Ravashi did the same thing for the Gemara. The only difference is whether it was written down as a text at their time or it was written down as a text a little bit later on. Either way, it should not impugn the authenticity or the credibility of the text that we have. Halacha has evolved and survived, and we believe that this is the text that we have, that has been passed down to us. And again, the Gemara itself is full of edits. The Gemara itself edits the text of the Mishnah, says you have to read the Mishnah differently. But that should not in any way impugn the credibility, the veracity, or the authenticity of our Mesorah and the chain of our tradition. And perhaps one of the greatest proofs to that is the character that the Rambam describes and the Rambam that the Rambam himself tried to emulate of Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, that in order to be a key player in the chain of Mesorah, in the chain of Halacha, it's not just that you have to be smart or that you have to know a lot of Torah. It's much more than that. You have to have the ability to perfect not only your intellectual Torah, you also have to perfect your ethical character traits. You need to be pious. You need to be humble. You need to distance yourself from physical pleasures. You need to be kind. You need to support the growth of Torah. You need to be an expert writer. You need to be an expert in understanding Hebrew. And then beyond all of that, you need to be part of a chain of tradition that goes all the way back to Moshe Rabbeinu. And when you have that, the issues of who wrote, who actually wrote down the particular text are really, I would say, eclipsed and are really immaterial compared to the long chain of tradition that we know and believe was passed down from generation to generation. So that is the end of our class for this evening. We did the Rambam's narrative account of the Mishnah, other Mishnaic literature like Brisos, Tosefos, Midrashim, and then we began to talk about the Gemara. Next class, again, I don't believe there will be class next week because of Shavas HaBetamas. Stay tuned for any information about a special program that we may have. But in the next class, we will finish talking about the Gemara, what it was included in the Gemara that wasn't included in the Mishnah, and that will serve as a segue to, I guess, the next major tangent in the Rambam's introduction to Mishnah, which is, what about the Agadic? What about the homiletical sections of the Talmud? The philosophical sections of the Talmud, the stories of the Talmud. How do we approach them? How do we understand them? With God willing, that will be in our next class. Until that point, I want to wish you a wonderful week and hope to speak with you soon. If any of you have any questions, feel free to use the chat box or unmute yourself.